Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From theblogulator.com.
This is Blogulator Radio.
Skewering and fawning over all things television for the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network, I am Bridget.
My name is Qualler.
And
our opinions are valid.
We got a few things to talk to you about today. Should we name what they all are and then talk about them? Or should we just surprise people?
You know what? I don't feel like surprising people today.
No, I don't feel like surprises.
No.
All right.
Surprises are pies of all sizes. As Garfield
says, is wont to say
in his opening sequence of Garfield and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Garfield says it, but
yeah.
So
he does say it in action. We'll play it for the listeners and we'll find out later in the program.
We'll end the show.
Yes.
Of all sizes.
Excellent.
Come on in. It's time to party the fun.
Well, don't spoil it.
So first we're going to talk about HBO's newest program.
The absolute newest program.
It just premiered this Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. The Newsroom.
The Newsroom. We're also going to talk a little bit about Bunheads.
Mm-hmm.
The new ABC Family dramedy, I guess you could call it.
Sherman Palladino.
Amy Sherman Palladino. She's kind of an auteur, like mm-hmm. Aaron Sorkin.
You probably know by now that we're fans.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about a film
debut of Courtney Cox.
Who we're both fans of, thanks to Cougar Town and the Scream franchise.
And Friends.
Why not Friends?
And the video, the Bruce Springsteen video.
I love that video.
Dancing in the Dark.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Dancing in the
Dark. Tall Hot Blonde was on Lifetime this past weekend. We're going to talk
about
that.
Yeah, premiered on Saturday night.
Then Bridget's going to talk about Real Housewives.
You're not going to join me in that?
I'll join you. Mm. You're going to lead the conversation. I'm going to just kind of chime in.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about summer TV watching goals.
It's good to set goals for oneself.
It is good to have goals.
When one can.
It is good to have goals.
And in order to...
So with that said, let's talk about the Newsroom.
All right. Well, I was resistant because of Jeff Daniels. Who has a stupid face, and I don't like him. And Jeff,
if you're listening, I'm sorry.
You're
like the only person on the internet whose main resistance to the show is Jeff Daniels' face.
I don't care.
Which I just think it's funny.
Well, now I'm unique.
It makes you very unique.
And I finally realized that the reason I think he looks like a dog is because he dressed up like a dog in that movie I hate.
Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah. Because I never saw that movie when everyone else saw it, so I have no nostalgic connection to it. And I saw it, like, 5-ish years ago and was like, this is stupid. This is absolutely
when did
stupid.
You see Dumb and Dumber 5-ish years ago?
Oh, I don't know. Someone was like, you've never seen Dumb and Dumber? And then we watched it, and it was horrible. It was so stupid. Because our friend Sarcastro on Facebook today, who also watched the Newsroom and hopefully will... tweet up about what he thinks about it.
Oh, he has been.
He mentioned his role, Jeff Daniels in Arachnophobia, which is a movie I love, and I've forgotten about that.
Yeah.
But...
And you love Speed, right? Or is that me who loves Speed?
That's you.
Well, I love Speed, but I thought maybe...
Who is he in Speed?
He was...
He's not Sandra
the cop
Bullock or
at the
Keanu
beginning
Reeves.
Who gets shot, and then he has to work an office job.
He would have to work in the office while everyone else is out on the bus, because he's got a boring, stupid face.
And a face that makes you feel comfortable.
I don't feel comfortable
happy.
With him. I don't feel happy with him.
His face does not make you happy?
No.
I don't even know you
makes
anymore.
Makes me angry. Because he looks...
Looks like a dog because of the costume?
Well, but also because of his face. And I don't like his voice.
You don't like his... I love Jeff Daniels' voice.
It's like kind of... I don't know.
Okay.
Kind of dopey.
Yeah, and
it's
lovable.
It's not lovable. It's just dopey. His character in the Newsroom, which is, like, basically a horrible person.
He's a really bad
person.
It's
how I always imagine Jeff Daniels to actually be in
real
life.
Because
one of those people who you're like, oh, but he's such a good guy, because he's kind of dopey looking, and, like, you're so sweet, and, like, he's not actually sweet at all.
The problem is he's the the Aaron Sorkin stand-in, though.
Well, so maybe it's actually he should Aaron be, because Sorkin, his face looks like a dick. Sorry, yeah. Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels, if you're listening, you can sum up in one sentence or less why you're not a dick face, then please.
So, besides Jeff Daniels' face, what other thoughts did you have about the pilot episode of The Newsroom? We haven't seen anything beyond that, but...
Well, after his little speech about how young people are ruining America, which, by the way, I kind of liked at first where he was going, because I hate the kind of question, like, what makes America the greatest country?
Mm-hmm. And from the other room, while I was watching it, when they asked that question, you said, it's not, and I was getting excited because I knew which direction that speech was going.
So right. So when he said it's not, I was at first like, oh, maybe I have to like him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he gave the reasons why it's not, I was like, oh, hey, baby boomers, this is HBO. We know you don't understand True Blood, so here's a show
that will open. You know, Girls was a little over your head.
Girls you thought was just awfully strange. Reminds you of your daughter who's living in New York doing God knows
what. She's just so funky.
I don't know if she's going to get a job, get a J-O-B, but, you just don't understand what she's doing with her hair these days.
Mm. Is that a dress from my closet that you're wearing?
And Game of Thrones is not really your style.
No,
there's an awful lot of profanity.
Let's face it, the baby boomers are
not HBO's target market. Right. Except for that documentary about George Bush. Except for a lot of the documentaries.
Yeah.
And all the miniseries about war. I feel like all the miniseries about wars are the ways to get baby boomers in. And now I feel like...
And HBO films.
Yes. And
they're just, the Hemingway and Gellhorn.
Come on.
Yeah. Baby boomers, hello.
But I feel like his whole speech about how America used to care about things and the moon and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this is for you, baby boomers.
Yeah.
The rest of the episode wasn't pandering to baby boomers. I don't think, but that part I was like, oh, here we go.
See, what I was doing with the show and what I've been trying to do really hard and what I'm blogging about later this week about is trying to separate the newsroom from the creator and the writer. And
Jeff Daniels' stupid face.
No, I'm fine with Jeff Daniels' face, but trying to separate the show from the Sorkin, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really hard to do that. And it's... If you try to separate yourself from the general internet conversation about the newsroom, which is basically you either love it or hate it, although I don't think anybody, even Sorkin apologists, I'm going to say, don't seem to totally love it or call it kind of like a middle-of-the-road Sorkin type of work.
Mm.
I'm trying really hard to just judge it based on being a TV show. And on that account, I think it worked in parts. And I'm still trying to determine what I liked about it. If it was just like I like the actors and I like how this is actually very much just like a 90s. A drama from the NBC in the mid-90s.
You really enjoyed the credits.
I love the credits. Because HBO has never had credits where it just it shows the name of the cast member and then it shows that character doing something on the show.
When they started doing it, you were like, oh, it's going to show I'm doing something in action? And he got really excited.
I know.
And he was clapping.
And then, because
it is very, '90s, like...
Right, and the episode ends with, an executive producer title card, which no other HBO show does, I don't think. I feel like HBO's brand is so specific down to the point where you expect a certain thing from the credits, from the way the credits are sequenced from the beginning to the end, that it's... My other concern about the show is... That from an HBO perspective is it doesn't really fit the HBO brand because it's so specific to Aaron Sorkin, and Aaron Sorkin is so, his shows are so
generic.
Identifiable.
Oh.
Well,
I feel like what's identifiable and specific about Aaron Sorkin is that it's like so predictable.
Oh, it's very predictable.
And like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, generic, I keep, like, in the sense that it, like, kind of writes itself, but not in a great way.
And it's very kind of preachy, if, in a sense. Not just in a sense. It's very preachy.
We've begun to expect less and less from each other. Is that what...
That was one of the Sorkinisms from the YouTube video that was circulating today.
It's funny.
I'm going to say that...
I thought the opening credits were fine. See, but I feel like if you take Sorkin away from it, and if you brought up the acting, and I think the cast, even Jeff Newman, the cast is pretty great. If you took away the fact that it's HBO produced, so you know it's like just a really like clean, clean is not the right word, but you know what I, like it's just like it's a really well produced. Right. It's professional.
Yes.
It's a professional show. These are professionals acting in it. All the little details are just pretty, I feel like always pretty perfect in HBO shows. But if you stripped that away and you're just left with, like, the writing, like, the plot and dialogue, then I feel like it's, like, you wouldn't even remember it.
Yeah.
And like, it would hardly even be a blip on, wow, I'm in a mood.
Well, I think you're hitting on a good point there, and I do, well, I liked the pilot in general. I do wonder, and this is kind of piggybacking off of what Miles McNutt was talking about in his blog earlier today. I do wonder where the show is going to go from here, because the way this episode is structured is you got to know all the characters in the newsroom, and then there was a big news report, and they delivered the news report.
I just remembered another thing I didn't like.
You interrupted my point. They obviously can't do that every single episode, and I don't know where the show can go over the course of a season.
They'll continue to produce perfect news,
right? And to that point, what do you think about the fact that it's set in the just distant enough past? Distant enough so that we can remark on the news stories of the yesteryear with perfect hindsight.
See, I actually really, really, really dislike when shows, movies, whatever, do that, because Jeff Daniels is not supposed to be a real guy, right?
No. Will McAvoy.
Will McAvoy is not a real guy. So there was no Will McAvoy in 2010 who was the first one to break that story before anyone else could do it.
Right.
So, like, did having the guy who was the inspector on the phone on the news, did that actually happen?
No.
I mean, do you know what I mean? So I really dislike
when they...
None of
it really happens, is the thing.
But the thing really happened. And all the facts about the story really happened. So this is what I'm saying. I really, really hate when TV and movies do this, because it's like they're taking, like, actual events, but they're... I don't know...
And the thing that...
Because then I want it either all to be real or none of it to... Just make it up. Just make up a new story. That's not hard.
Yeah. And on that point, this is where I try to separate myself from Sorkin, specifically because of the numerous encounters that have been reported on the internet with him, where he is in an interview and he talks very sanctimoniously to a reporter about how the news should be done, and kind of looking it, that he personally looks down upon a lot of the media and seems to have a I know it all kind of attitude about how the media should present itself and what America means, blah 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 blah. I've tried to separate myself from that, because just thinking about that would just make me too angry. I'm trying really hard to just judge it based on, as a TV show, does this make sense? I was trying to justify it in my head yesterday by saying, like, okay, well, if this... Okay, it's taking place in the couple of years ago. It's commenting on news stories, and from a perspective of what if we got it all right, and, you know, maybe things can be important if we all work together to create a common good.
See, but
good.
Then...
Let me finish.
I'm talking for a while.
Okay. I like the aspect of it where it's a group of people that seem to work together really well, just from like an aesthetic purpose perspective. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I didn't want to say my point.
No, I see your point.
You're just like him. You're just like Alan Sorkin and all the men.
Listen, internet girl.
Oh, that made me so mad.
He actually said,
listen, sorority girl. Like, yeah. What a dick. Like, I'm sorry that this, like, young girl is asking you a stupid question. Just like all the stupid questions that people get. Like, right. Just get over you. Oh, God.
And somebody else pointed
that's
out,
like, such a sexist, condescending...
Yeah.
Stereotype. Like, way to totally reduce her to a cultural stereotype based on, like, one stupid question that she asked you. And not acknowledge the way in which, like, that question was not just her own design, but mm-hmm. in some way influenced by the conditions that she's living in. See, he seems a little too personal responsibility-y for my taste.
Right, but he's a liberal, Bridget.
Yeah, well, he's...
He's a real liberal. He voted for Kennedy.
Oh, well, good for him. That was probably really hard to vote for the most popular president in the history of the United right. States of America.
I don't actually know if
was
he
that
did,
hard
but
for
it
you?
Seems like something
was that hard for you? No, okay, so another thing that I really didn't like about it is that, like, totally out of nowhere, and I think it was supposed to be a joke, but I feel like it didn't go over well because of the tone of the rest of the episode. He was like, I have a blog. And then later he's like, seriously, I have a blog?
Right, because
like,
blogs,
oh.
Right? Right, Bridget? Blogs.
That's another, like, hey, baby boomers, we understand you. Uh-huh. And we understand that you're going to be consuming a lot of stuff because you're all retiring and collecting Social Security.
Did
which,
you know,
which
get
we
on your
won't
Twitter
get.
Account,
but
Bridget.
By the way, it's the girl who's 20 years old in college. It's her fault that America's in this horrible state right now. That was what he was kind of implying. That's what that whole speech was implying. And yeah. I hate when people do that. Like, it's not... Like, don't blame, like, the upcoming generation. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a chance to screw it up yet. Like, mm-hmm. it's probably you. You, oh, I don't like it. Oh, I'm giving it an F. I'm changing my B- to an F.
Wow.
It gets better because I like all the female characters in it.
Yeah, and I really liked Emily Mortimer was very good. Alison Pill was very good. I didn't really like Sam Waterston at first because he seemed really goofy.
He seemed like he was like, what if I did this role in a silly voice?
Right.
What if I played it silly?
I liked it.
Near
the ends.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll be interested to see if like Will McAvoy becomes like a nice guy mm-hmm. by the end of the season. I'm going to keep watching it.
Oh, I'll keep watching it. But I'm going to get... this is going to be... How did you put it? The one you love to hate?
The Hate Watch special of the summer.
Yeah.
Because I can't... Hannah Horvath.
I can't hate...
Hate reading that book.
I can't hate watch True Blood anymore because I feel like True Blood just is what it is.
It's just...
I feel like True Blood has actually like gotten better in the few episodes I've seen of this season or one episode because it seems to have dropped its... we're going to try to have any kind of message and just, like, be fun.
Yeah.
Which
is fine.
I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I actually, despite the fact that, like, it was a really cheesy thing for them to be like, well, we're all giving up on everything, but what if as this, like, incidentally, this huge news thing is going to come in and it's going to restore your faith in news and because we're going to do it for... But, like, I actually... kind of enjoy it. I enjoyed the episode more and more as it went along, so I did kind of get sucked into the Alan Sorkin...
Aaron Sorkin.
Whatever, I don't... if he can't be bothered to remember my name, I can't be bothered to remember his. I assume he wouldn't be bothered to remember my name.
Oh, I'm sure
if
he would
I met
not.
Him.
I'm sure he would not.
So,
you want to move on to Bunheads?
Yeah, well, do we want to have, like, closing remarks on the newsroom, or...
Yeah.
Okay, best part and worst part of the episode, of the pilot.
Best part was the conversation between Sam Waterston and Jeff Daniels, where Sam Waterston said, we had a good newscast because we just decided to, which was also the title of the episode.
Yeah.
And the worst part was that one guy tripping on the woman's handbag, and it was supposed to be funny, and it wasn't.
Yeah, but wasn't the we, see, again, that seems a little, like... conservative idiot. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like
it is.
We had a good newscast because we decided to, and it just took gumption, and we did it, and that was
like
that.
In a heartwarming kind of way, it pulled my heartstrings. Just
as does conservative ideology,
right? It doesn't mean that I have to agree with it.
So one thing that I think would be kind of interesting in terms of how this plays out is if they're going to go back and say, if you think this was kind of Sorkin's, is it Albert?
Huh?
Albert?
Albert?
Aaron? I'm kidding. I'm pretending I can't remember.
Oh, it's funny.
Shut up. If this is his, like, going back and saying, okay, what if we got it right and reported it correctly? I wonder if they're going to follow through and have, like, so, like, what are the repercussions or, like, of having reported it correctly? Do you know what I'm saying? Because, like, is it just, if your goal is just an informed public and it stops there, then that's not a goal at all.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, if they had reported it correctly and, like, that's the end of that.
What like if there's, that, like, so an like, alternate universe?
That's what I'm saying. An alternate universe where, like, BP was, like, actually held responsible in a real way and, like, people actually changed their gas consumption and, like, you know what I mean?
And then it's like, now where do we go?
Right. So, like, maybe would they, by the time they get to 2012, everyone has a hoverboard.
Right.
Finally.
Whoa. Whoa.
That's how I would write it.
Okay. You sold me on that pilot, Bridget. Uh-huh.
Well, that's the kind of the arc.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that's where this show is going, then I'm definitely on board.
And if it's not,
I'm all
then,
about hovercrafts.
Then patent pending or something.
Yeah.
Trademark it.
Yeah.
So my favorite part of the episode was when, who's the British one, kind of?
Emily Mortimer.
When she, like, mimed something to her assistant.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, because that was really funny. And I think she's really funny and good and quirky and
yeah.
I liked that. But that, for some reason, really tickled me, that little moment that she had.
I like that, too.
And then the least favorite part of it was the everything that Jeff Daniels was in. I'm sorry. I don't like it, but I did give the episode originally a B-.
I understand.
So.
Okay. Let's move on to another auteur of television who's come back to haunt us. Not haunt, but come home to roost. Amy Sherman Palladino presents ABC Family's Bunheads, the worst title ever.
Yeah.
Right,
because
next to Terriers.
Okay, now if you were also in the ballet community and I'm just wrong about this, then tweet at Vlogulator Radio to correct me. But I was a dancer until I was 18 years old, and I've never heard that as a word. Bunheads. Like, that's not, like, an insider term.
It's not a thing?
No,
it's not a thing. Really?
That's my piece of pizza.
Sorry. Put it down.
You baby boomer, taking what's not yours.
Let me tell you something about pizza, Bridget.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I assume no baby boomers listen to a podcast. Mom, Dad, I love you.
You're probably not listening.
But if you are, I love you.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, so I don't... it's a horrible title, and I don't really... If it's a reference to something, I think it's, like, a reference to, like...
It's supposed to be a reference to ballet dancers.
Well, I get that it's referring to ballet dancers, but, like, it's not...
Because they have buns.
It's
they
not
all
like
have
a, it's not
hair
a, but
buns.
But it's not a term.
I know. And that's where ABC Family could have come in and said, you know what, Amy? We love the show.
Love you.
Love Gilmore Girls.
Love what you're doing.
Change the title and we'll pick it up.
Right.
That's where a little bit of, like, step into, like...
But isn't she historically kind of, mightn't she have been, like, forget it?
It's possible.
Isn't she kind of that kind of, doesn't she have that reputation?
Well, she definitely is, she left Gilmore Girls after, in the midst of its run.
Yeah.
So, I guess, but she hasn't had a show on since then.
And it got way worse without you, Amy.
Sorry, she had one show on that was on briefly and on Fox that was canceled quickly.
So what do we think of Bunheads so far?
I like it.
I like it, too.
I enjoy it a lot.
I enjoy it a lot, too. It's no Gilmore Girls, but, like, maybe those are impossible standards.
I think they are. I think
for me to hold this show up to.
I think the pilot was really good. I think Sutton Foster is... I think I like...
Is serviceable?
I like her in the Amy Sherman Palladino stand-in type role that Lauren Graham is.
But she's not Lauren Graham. Hashtag Lauren Graham.
It's really...
Where are my Lauren Graham message boards, people? Like,
yeah.
She's...
I mean, it's impossible.
It's hard.
It's impossible to be as good as Lauren Graham is in Gilmore Girls for that particular role.
Yes.
But I think Sutton Foster does a good job. I think there are things in the pilot where she's a Broadway actress, Tony Award-winning Broadway actress who... Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is her first TV role. In the pilot, she has a few lines that seem a bit... she delivers them a bit too... stagey for my taking, but in episodes...
Playing for the seats in the back.
Yeah, right. But in the second episode, she does tone it down a little bit. In the third episode of what we was on tonight of what we watched, it
seems
was
like
kind
of
similar.
Better, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm she's definitely a great actress. She's good in the role. I think kind of like it's hard to watch The Newsroom and not have Alan Sorkin in mind. It's really
Aaron.
Sorry. I'm sorry. That one was legit. It's really hard for me to watch Bunheads and not have Gilmore Girls in the back of my mind, especially with...
Oh, yeah. Kelly Bishop
in the
well.
in what's interestingly a very different character from Emily Gilmore, but it seems like she's getting a lot of the same dialogue,
right?
Or well, not obviously the same, but similar kinds of snarky, over the top hyperbole, which is brilliant and funny, but and she's delivering it really similarly. So it's almost like they took Emily Gilmore and put her in a dance outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And told her, like, okay, now you're Emily Gilmore, but as a hippie.
Right, right.
And I keep thinking Sutton Foster is, like, playing Lauren Graham.
Right.
It's like okay, and you're to... Lauren Graham, but you're a ballet dancer or a show, you know.
Right. Like, you pointed out the way that Sutton Foster talks is it sounds like she's always delivering a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Lauren Graham just sounded...
She
more
made
natural.
The dialogue of Amy Sherman Palladino, which can sound very
like
much like you are always delivering a bit, she right. made it seem like someone's actually talking.
Right.
Like, Lauren Graham's delivery of those lines made you forget about the fact that no one talks like that.
Mm-hmm. I think also the show, not to compare Gilmore Girls to Bunheads, because maybe it's an unfair comparison. Maybe
it's
a different show.
But it's really hard
show.
Not to compare.
Right, but I think the things about Gilmore Girls that were great in addition to Lauren Graham were the setting, which I haven't gotten a sense of Stars Hollow-esque setting.
Yeah, there hasn't been a real
Paradise.
Sense of place yet at all.
Yeah, right.
I would
sense of place,
that.
That's good. And then,
I go to school.
Yeah, you do. You're a student.
Yeah.
And...
I got a degree.
And the kids are... Nowhere near Alexis Bledel and gang.
I was supposed to be a baby voice, but...
What?
Never mind. I'm trying out my different...
Okay.
That's me as a baby.
I'm gonna stop comparing it to Gilmore Girls right now because it's probably unfair to do so. I think the second episode really impressed me because, spoiler alert, at the end of the first episode, Alan Ruck's character dies.
I thought that was ballsy.
That was pretty ballsy, and I was a little afraid of where it was going to go, and I have to say the second episode did surprise me. I didn't think... I was afraid it was going to go too ABC Family-esque, where it was, like, very heavy melodrama,
mm-hmm.
and it really didn't, but it was... But it did also... kind of tackle death head on in a way that I haven't seen from any other shows on ABC Family.
Yeah.
So it was more moving than I expected it to be, but it was also more funny than I.
Yeah.
And so it eased my funny
worries. It was really
worries.
Good. I thought it was better than the pilot, and I thought, like you said, the 20 or so minutes of what we've seen of this third episode seemed better. So I think it's finding its footing. I also had to think back to the pilot of Gilmore Girls, and I don't know that it was an outstanding pilot.
Right.
Right? So, like, even,
kind of
like,
set
like
up
the first
world.
Few, because we're starting it over from the beginning, and the first few episodes,
mm-hmm.
like, it's taking a while for characters to kind of figure out who they are, and, like, for actors to get a sense of who they are. I think what made Gilmore Girls really awesome from the beginning was Lauren Graham and Alexis Bledel
mm-hmm.
and Emily Bishop. And the,
Kelly Bishop.
What's wrong with me? And the, and the chemistry that the three of those
yeah.
actresses had was just, like, right away, it felt like
yeah.
a mother-daughter, grandmother.
It's kind of a
like,
striking gold kind of thing that it, even on shows from writers who are really good, it doesn't always happen right
mm-hmm.
away.
But like Girls on HBO, this is another, and it doesn't get the same kind of buzz that, like, I mean, for that reason, but,
right.
like, and, like, Gilmore Girls, you know, Amy Sherman-Palladino is a woman showrunner.
Right.
That doesn't happen very often. She's
right.
writing a show, a network show, too, unlike HBO. Is ABC Family a network?
It's a cable network.
Or is it cable?
Network.
with lower decker cable. More, whatever.
It's kind of second tier cable channel.
But, a show that is predominantly female cast, mm-hmm. like Gilmore Girls, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, so, that alone is, I think, a reason to watch it. But I also think it's going to be a good show. Yeah, I mean, it is totally unfair to compare it to Gilmore Girls, but it's really, really hard not to do that. And I'm such a Gilmore Girls fan, and I love Amy Sherman-Palladino for her work in Gilmore Girls, and it's just a really smart, funny show. And I'm hoping that Bunheads will be, and I have, if it keeps going, I think it'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how different it is writing something for the ABC Family audience, as opposed to, I think Gilmore Girls was on the WB, CW.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really seem like the writing is that concerned about the audience, because it seems
a little more ABC Family than Gilmore Girls does.
I think on the surface it does, but
yeah,
if you told somebody who was watching The Secret Life of the American Teenager or Pretty Little Liars to stay tuned for a show about a 40-something woman who's widowed and her grandma friend.
That's true.
They probably wouldn't be that interested. And, oh, by the way, there are some kids in it who aren't very well-developed.
Yeah, but I wonder where those characters are going to go.
But it's mainly about... Yeah, right.
It still has a little bit more of, like, that Disney spin on everything.
Yeah, I don't know if it's...
Like,
I think, though, that that's, like, the aesthetic feel to the show, though.
Yeah.
I don't feel that in the writing at all. Like, as far as the dialogue goes and kind of where...
I don't feel it in the writing either, but it's there.
It's definitely
and
there.
And I just wonder how that's going to affect...
Yeah.
I don't know, as it progresses, but... Yeah. So, favorite and worst... Least favorite. Worst and best part so far.
Oh, man. It's hard to say... Pinpoint. I don't know. I'll do mine. You go first.
Worst is in the pilot episode when the mother asks her new daughter-in-law to dance with her at the bar, and the way she says it is something like, "Let's see if we can dance together."
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a metaphor because they're both dancers, and
right.
that really made me cringe a little bit. And then they
dance
together.
On the nose.
But my favorite part so far.
Plus, it's like, can we coexist?
Like, right? That's what I. It's a metaphor.
Right.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
But like, my favorite part actually came right after that when we find out that Hubble was killed, because that took me totally by surprise, and I thought the way that that news was delivered and the reaction. I don't know. I liked that a lot. So.
I think my least favorite part was that part, but only...
The which part?
The Hubble's dead. Surprise, twist ending. Only because I didn't see it coming at all, but my fears were assuaged in the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that second episode, I think the interaction where they were talking about Mark Wahlberg movies was my favorite.
Mm.
So.
Okay.
Anyway. Bunheads. We like it.
Pretty good, on ABC Family.
Yeah.
Now something that's definitely not for kids.
Yeah. How do we talk about Tall, Hot, Blonde?
I don't know. It's like, what? Yeah.
Well, let's start by talking about what it's about.
Well, so, it's really about family.
It really...
And the fears of intimacy.
It's really about the... It is
the
actually about the terrors of intimacy.
Kind of.
So it's ripped from the headlines.
So first of all, Kohler and I were going to go see a real movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. A theater movie. Theatrical release.
Moonrise Kingdom.
And Saturday night rolled around and we were way too tired. And we turned on the TV... just to see what was on, and Tall Hot Blonde had just started, and that was kind of the deciding point for us to stay in instead of go to the movie, because we had both been looking forward to it, and it's not often that we're both looking forward to a Lifetime original.
And I honestly didn't even know about it until Saturday afternoon,
mm-hmm.
when Lifetime aired an all-day movie marathon of specifically the Lifetime... Dangers of the Internet genre.
Which is one of my favorite subgenres of the Lifetime.
It's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
like the cyber seduction movie with J.D. McCoy, who's addicted to online porn.
J.D. McCoy from Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights, yeah.
Because this is what I like so much about Lifetime movies in general, but it's heightened somehow in the internet ones.
Oh, yeah.
So in the Internet is Evil is what I like to call this theme of Lifetime movies.
Right.
In the Internet is Evil-themed Lifetime movies, people go from zero to totally crazy after what seems like one encounter with the internet.
That's what happens on the internet.
Like, it's like the internet instantly turns totally well-adjusted, happy Christian people
right
into psychopaths.
Church-going
into totally folks. Crazy
psychos.
Out of control killers.
Nutsoid
people. Yeah. Because that's how the internet works. So
it is.
In Tall Hot Blonde, it's basically the story, and it's based on a true story.
It is, and there's already a documentary made about it.
And we have to watch the documentary, because I bet this guy didn't go from zero to creepy.
He was probably creepy.
I bet he was already pretty creepy. And, what's the actor who played him?
Garrett Dillahunt.
Who's a handsome man.
Right.
And he has to play this. You could tell
TV's Raising Hope. And
you could tell it's based on a true story because otherwise, the way that he was made up and his like mannerisms and voice were too like hokey.
Too very specific,
but also cartoonish to not be based on it. Like to right. not be based
it's
on
like
an actual person who acted that
when,
way.
When like John Travolta plays Bill Clinton in Primary Colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you're based on Bill Clinton, and like, you're based on a real person, Mr. Person who's supposed to be a fictional character.
Well, because in Tall Hot Blonde, if this lead character, Thomas, if he was not based on a real person, then I feel like everyone would have, like, any director would have been like, you need to tone it down a bit. I don't really know what you're going for as
right.
an actor, but it's way over the top.
It's strange.
And it's strange. I don't like it. So when I just saw it, just the way his mustache and glasses, just like his wardrobe and like makeup and everything.
And the way he kind of mumbles.
Yeah, you're like, that's...
He
this
didn't
is,
really have an
this
accent.
This is based on a person, isn't it?
Right.
He didn't really have an accent. I call that accent pervert. He kind of talked like a pervert. And
he had the
pervert
pervy.
Mustache.
Yeah.
And glasses.
Right.
And it was supposed to take place in the mid-90s. And what's her name from...
Laura San Giacomo from... Who? TV's Just Shoot Me.
Yeah, and
The Stand miniseries.
And Pretty Woman.
Oh.
She's the other prostitute friend.
Good for her.
Yeah. So it's funny because we have, Courtney Cox, who, like, she's got to be in on the joke. This is what Qualler and I said to each other every 20 minutes
she's
or so.
She's she has too much of a sense of humor to have directed this movie. Like, with the straight-up, I'm going to direct a thriller face.
Right. Like, you've got to be in on the joke.
Like,
right?
And having convinced, like, fairly legitimate actors who probably don't
right.
need to
Good
do Lifetime
right.
movies.
Yes.
Like,
and they
Garrett
did.
Dillahunt, he has a TV show, and he's a fine actor. Laura San Giacomo, fine actress.
And he, like... played these roles as well as you could possibly play them.
They did. They were very good.
And I actually liked the way it was directed.
I did too.
Like,
genuinely.
But it wasn't. But it was a ridiculous to the point of hilarious movie because of the plot. But which I can only blame on the true story it's based on.
Right.
And I've always hated the expression "you can't make this stuff up" because of course you can make it up.
You
can
make
anything up.
Anything
literally.
Up.
That's like the what making it up.
Making
means.
Things up is just. I just made it up right now.
But, like, I finally am starting to think, okay, maybe that expression refers to something that's so stupid that if it were made up, no one would pay attention to it because it would just be too stupid. Right?
Right.
So, like, this is a story that you can't make up because if I made up this story, my, like, fourth grade English teacher would be like, and I don't see how your character development is really, like, happening. And well, Bridget,
right.
do you really think that this person would have responded to this situation in this way?
Right.
Do you think that's realistic? So it's about a case, and what's the documentary called?
It's also called Tall Hot Blonde.
Okay, so it's about something, a case, I guess, of murder is how it ends, but also how it starts, which is a good little directing twist.
Right.
So we open with some guy getting shot.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, I don't remember.
I think it starts there, and then it goes, we have to go backwards.
In media res.
kind of. But no, it's not in media res. It's because you then go back to the beginning. Right. Yeah, so, yeah. Okay. But maybe that... Yeah. So, yeah, basically this guy is Thomas, played by...
Garrett DeLonge.
Is a regular creepy father.
Who loves to play poker with the guys.
Once a month.
At the factory.
Once a month. Can I have my once a month? Was that pretty...
Yeah, that's good. Pervert accent.
I just don't know money. It's my 1 month. Would you begrudge...
Would you begrudge my 1 month?
Except everything we do turns into Woody Allen.
Yeah. Which is also kind of a pervert voice. We should have picked up on that.
Would you begrudge me that? Would you begrudge me that?
Well, it starts
Imagine that I've got big, like, glasses and a mustache. And I'm standing kind of weird. Like, I don't know what to do with anything. So, right. like, it starts with, like, him and, well, after the shooting, he's, like, at his daughter's, like, swim meet. So he's got a wife who's a nurse or something and two daughters aged 11 and 13. And they're just a totally normal, happy family with nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And he likes to play poker with the guys. And he comes back from his one night of poker and tries to have sex with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And it's like, it ends with him rolling over and saying, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Which we can assume.
Yeah.
And so he's actually not happy, I guess. So see, there's something
wrong. The seeds were planted long ago.
Right. But then his friend said, well, we play poker all the time on the internet. And he's like, what?
What's the internet? Do you talk to each other on the phone?
Yeah, and it's
like, he didn't have a basic concept of, like, what the internet was.
Which yet. I guess...
Even though he had a computer at his house.
And the internet.
And he had the internet already. Right.
Well, his wife liked to go on it for emails and stuff.
Right, right.
So he goes online to play poker. He's playing poker with his friends. And the scenes of him sitting at the computer were wonderful because he would narrate what he was doing and saying to people.
Right.
You might think that that's, like, a stupid, like, way to, like, let the audience know what's happening in a scene like that, but actually, you believe that this character is probably talking to himself and narrating the things he's doing while he's doing it. So, of course, he's on the internet, and a dialogue box pops up, and it's from someone called Tall Hot Blonde, and you can guess where it goes from there, and I guess we don't want to give too much away, and we don't usually do this much plot summary.
Right.
But it's just... It's hard to talk about, but you really have to experience it. I would recommend Tall Hot Blonde. I give it an A.
Wow.
On my Lifetime movie scale.
Wow.
On my Lifetime movie scale.
On your Lifetime movie scale, sure.
Yeah.
I would say it was one of the better Lifetime movies
I would say I've seen. Flawless as a Lifetime movie.
I think...
If one of his daughters were anorexic, it would be perfect.
Yeah.
And she kind of was. Well, they hinted at it, because she didn't want to eat the food at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, the kids were very, like, rote and...
I know, I'm reaching. But the point of the movie is that it's another movie where he's like, everything's totally fine, and then the internet happened, and my life completely fell apart.
And Bridget pointed out that I should pay attention, because I would learn a lot about...
About what happens when husbands aren't grateful for their wives.
Right. So I guess I did learn
Hashtag
that.
Hashtag you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time I'm like, it's not really a Tall Hot Blonde. It's not really a because he's pretending to be like a 20-year-old Marine
right.
to get her. And then his wife finds out and she's upset and she exposes him to her and she's like, it's my husband and he's old and he has kids. And
the thing that was kind
of
weird.
But then, of course, the twist at the very end is that it wasn't really a Tall Hot Blonde. It was the Tall Hot Blonde's mom.
And the thing that was weird about it to me that made it different from other Lifetime movies is that the actors were playing the parts pretty straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talented enough so that they weren't overacting anything. So it felt kind of like... Normally a Lifetime movie has a crescendo that just builds to just total... like, batshit craziness near the end that just usually doesn't make sense.
Well, this kind of happens because there's a lot of him going, ah, fine, whore, ah!
Yeah. Which is, to me, it didn't build enough to, like, a crazy enough crescendo for me to...
He shot a guy in his car.
Yeah, but even, I mean, that... in Lifetime movie terms. If we're
that's true.
Talking
okay.
about in purely Lifetime movie scale, mm-hmm. was not as crazy as it could be. I still enjoyed watching it. At the end of it, it made me kind of feel like I had just eaten a whole bunch of pizza.
Yeah, that's how it'll make you feel.
Like, is that how all Lifetime movies make
yes,
you feel?
That is how
it... Or, like, at the end, you're like, I just watched this entire movie,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't very good.
Yeah, and you feel like you can't fit into your pants as well.
Yeah.
Metaphorically. That's how it makes you feel.
Okay.
So the twist at the end is that the tall, hot blonde is not actually a tall, hot blonde. She's also, like, a middle-aged mm-hmm. woman. So Qualler
yeah.
and I were saying that if we were to rewrite this as a rom-com,
right.
it would be called Young at Heart.
With an at symbol.
With an at symbol, is Qualler's idea. And that at the end, when they found out, but you're not a young Marine, but you're
right.
not a tall, hot blonde, then they would laugh about it and get together.
His name is Bill Young, and her name is Mary Hart.
Right, and then, do you like pina coladas?
Do, 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 do.
And getting caught in the rain.
Do, 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 do.
In that song,
what is that? What does the song have to do with?
The song tells a story of a husband and a wife putting out an ad, and then they find out it's actually, or one puts out an ad and one answers it, and then it's actually them. Yeah, it's actually a horrible song because that's not how it would end.
Right.
If you put out an ad, like a date ad while we're married, and
right.
I answered a date ad, and
right.
then we found out it was each other,
but
I don't feel like
I...
we would laugh about it. I feel like we'd be like, you weren't out to. And it would be horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. But it turns out we were looking for each other all along.
And
it,
but, like, how do you never know that they like... It's about you don't really
I
know each other as much.
I know.
It's kind of fun.
I get it.
I don't know.
I didn't know you were such a Jimmy Buffett fan.
Shut up. There's some good stuff in there.
Wow. Okay.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Tall Hot Blonde, or Young at Heart.
Young at Heart. We're gonna.
So try to watch it like it's a rom com and see how you.
What
feel.
Else? What else did we have going when we were talking about Young at Heart?
I don't
TV
know.
Show.
No, it wasn't a TV show. It was a movie.
It was a movie. Okay.
Who are we gonna? I don't know. Meg Ryan, Tom
yeah,
Hanks. They're getting too old.
That ship is sealed.
No, but they're perfect for older people.
Oh yeah.
Or, no, you know who it would be? It'd be Diane Keaton.
Uh-huh.
And... George Clooney.
Okay.
Yeah? Because he's old now, right?
He's not as old as Diane Keaton.
Oh, it'd be Diane Keaton, and for a twist...
Uh-huh.
Mandy Patinkin.
Perfect.
Right?
Sure.
And it'd be billed as, like, a Diane Keaton and his...
Right.
Glorious return to
film. I don't see Mandy Patinkin going online enough though for this to
well,
work.
Well, that's the thing, because their kids probably.
I don't see Mandy Patinkin
Dad,
sitting in front
get
of his
on
computer
Facebook.
Playing poker online ever. So
well, that, but we'll do up Mandy Patinkin the same way. What's his name was done up. In the movie. I
don't think you can do that to Mandy Patinkin.
Oh, Tom Selleck.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Tom Selleck, Diane.
A sad Tom Selleck where he comes home from work and wears glasses and, like,
yeah.
sadly opens up his laptop. And you can see, like, his head kind of, like... I can see the shot in my head right now of, like, the camera from the perspective of the laptop, where he opens the laptop, and all you see is, like, the darkness with, like, the laptop screen.
If this movie happens in a couple of years, we're suing.
Yeah. Screw
you. I just want everyone to know that.
Screenwriters of Hollywood.
Who I assume...
We're copyrighting
this
right now.
Who I assume told the internet for, clever,
clever rom-com,
small-time podcasts,
rom-com
yeah.
ideas that are generated from small-time podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean not small, but that we're small-time.
Well, we're big at heart. I don't know.
No,
sorry.
I don't even want to talk about Real Housewives now.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
the Jersey stuff is going crazy.
I do like
totally team Jacqueline. Teresa is crazy. Like
Does Teresa always like have like once every few episodes does she start talking like this?
This is, yeah, kind of.
That's kind
of
awesome.
And it's also like so Teresa is one of those people
well.
For whom like every single Lifetime character that you think that's not a real character, that's not a human. Like,
right.
It's like oh wait, but there's one.
Uh huh.
Right. So she also goes from 0 to 1,000 and. in the season with Danielle, whatever season, was that season two or three? I don't know.
I have no idea.
But, like, I was so in love with Teresa. And even last season, the first part of it, I was so team Teresa, and I was like, oh, Melissa and Kathy, boo. Mm. And then, like, you kind of watch her totally unravel during that season, and now this season, Teresa's the obvious villain. And I don't know how much, like, of this is actually real and how much of it is Bravo stuff, and I like to imagine for my own, like, I don't know, sense of decency that it's not real, and that it's heavily prompted, and that they agree who's going to be the villain of the season, because someone has to be the villain or else it's boring, and I don't know, but it's like actually kind of hard to watch, and Teresa just, it seems like she's losing it, so we'll see where it goes from here.
What about the Orange County housewives? What's going on with them?
They're boring compared to the New Jersey. All the other housewives compared to the New Jersey housewives are boring. And New York housewives I like because they have the nicest things.
Let me tell you something, though, Bridget. Money can't buy you class.
Anytime the Real Housewives of New York is on and Qualler is home anywhere from another room, he'll go, ooh, is that the Countess? And start singing.
Money can't buy you class. It's true, though. It's true. Money can't buy you class. What a song. What a
song. So I like that for all the years of us living together and me watching The Real Housewives, the things that, like, it's kind of like having, like, a five-year-old, and you think they're not listening to what the grown-ups are talking about, and then they'll just repeat something to you, and you're like, whoa, we have to censor what we say. So, like, Qualler, I think that you're, like, at the table on your computer or doing something in a different room. But some of it's seeping in. So
you're,
like,
saying I'm a five-year-old, is what you're saying.
Is that what you heard me say?
Yeah.
Then you're not
Do not disrespect my family!
That was good.
Thank you.
I feel like we're going to scare all of our neighbors. There's been a lot of shouting.
Yeah.
This episode. So, that's it for The Real Housewives. What are your summer TV watching goals?
I'm catching up on Homeland, which, holy crap, I can't believe I haven't watched this yet, because now, when you talk about an amazingly good pilot, you talk about Homeland, because that is one frickin' great pilot, and the second episode is also great, and I'm really, really excited to finish the first season. Claire Danes is amazing. Damian Lewis is amazing. Mandy Patinkin is amazing. The tension that builds in the show just from two episodes is phenomenal. Just, like, I'm already super excited to see when Claire Danes and Damian Lewis get in a room together and, like,
that's tension.
It's a really good show.
I agree, and I'm really excited about it too. And I hated 24. I was not a 24 fan.
But it's like they took all of the good parts of 24 and were like, what if we did it and we weren't racist?
Kind of.
And or actually, sexist. And made it, yeah, and made it, like, really, really, like, psychologically.
Yeah, thrilling. And I actually know what the, to a certain extent, I know what the twist is, and I know, don't or whatever. I know, I don't know if it's a twist. I know how it ends, and I know, the general arc because of,
somebody wrote a paper.
An academic stuff. So there's a
academia
lot of...
taught you.
There's a buzz about it, and that it's doing a lot of interesting things.
That makes me excited about it, too, is that there's an academic buzz about the show, which makes me feel really smart.
That was a smart voice. So even kind of knowing what's going to happen, I'm actually more excited than I thought I would be to watch it and see how it unfolds. And part of that, I would say, like, 50% of that is just me loving on Claire Danes, because I love her.
She's so great.
And she doesn't do enough stuff, because she's...
She's choosy about her roles.
Well, and yes, for her. That wasn't a critique
right.
on her part. No, it was just a bemoaning, I don't get to see her as much as I want to. And see how I talk about them like they're my real-life friends?
I do.
That's a little weird.
And Mandy Patinkin, see, I he's a phenomenal actor as well.
Chicago Hope.
Ugh, man. And he is just Broadway. So smart. That's something my mother says about Mandy Patinkin characters a lot.
just brilliant.
So smart.
Just a genius.
And then, I know you're still not totally on board, but I'm going back and watching the first season of Enlightened. Which I'm really enjoying it a lot. I've only watched the first two episodes, but it is doing something really interesting that it's the only show that I've ever seen that's truly about trying to be enlightened.
Hello, I heard Huckabees or whatever. I'm kidding.
Yeah. But,
The Sopranos.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of like a more optimistic version of The Sopranos. Mm. And it's a little bit more,
I like Laura Dern.
Yeah, she's really good in the show. And Mike White, who's introduced in the second episode and is also the,
from the White co-writer.
Stripes? Nope, from, Dawson's Creek writer / guy who looks kind of creepy.
Oh, with like the really pale eyebrows?
Yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
Writers.
I know, right?
And just kidding.
So, and I know that as the season went on, it obviously got renewed by HBO. It didn't get very good ratings at all, but it was critically acclaimed enough that there's going to be another season, and I like it.
Cool. Can we watch that together?
Yeah. Let's do it tonight.
All right.
After our walk.
I love you.
I'll start from the beginning with you. I love you so much.
But money can't buy you class. Should we say something quick about our sponsors?
Yes. Blogulator Radio is brought to you in part by Netflix.
Netflix. Can you watch Gilmore Girls on Netflix? I don't know about instant, but
you don't know.
You probably...
You can get the discs.
This is a bad... probably.
You can probably get the...
Sorry.
You can go to bit.ly/blogflix, enter in that web address, and get your 2-week free membership trial to Netflix.
You know what you can watch on Netflix Instant?
What?
Deadly Women.
Yeah, you can.
And it's kind of worth it for that alone.
Mm.
Plus,
I would pay $8.99 a month just for Deadly Women.
Plus, you can support netcasts.
If you subscribe through bit.ly/blogflix.
Right.
So, do it.
Please.
Where can you follow us on Twitter, Bridget?
The Blogulator.
You can follow us at The Blogulator for our... Oh, my God. You can follow our blog at The Blogulator. You can follow this podcast at Blogulator Radio. You can follow me at Mar Qualler, MarQualler.
You can follow me at Best Bridget.
She's the best Bridget on the internet. Don't follow just the regular Bridget.
No, you
BRIGITTE, because that is not this Bridget. She's the best Bridget.
Best Bridget.
You get it.
It's important to follow me because I tweet once a week.
Right. After I prompt you to for like 5 times a day every day. Yeah. So that's definitely worth
and following. It's always golden. It always gets tweet of the day.
Oh, yeah.
That's an official.
Right.
Yeah.
Check out the other shows on Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network.
There's some good ones.
And with that, I guess I'll leave it to Garfield to carry us out.
Yeah. Just right. One quick reminder.
Our opinions are valid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Garfield and friends.
We're ready to
party.
Party,
we're ready.
Yeah. I hope you bring lots of spaghetti.
I'm scared. Come on in, come to the place where fun never ends. Come on in, it's time to party with Garfield and friends. Dancing.
Fiesta.
Romancing.
Siesta.
Samba.
La Bamba.
Ay, caramba.
Disguises.
Surprises.
And pies of.
And pies of all sizes.
Ah.
Come on in, come to the place where fun never ends.